Don't say.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of the Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
You know, there used to be only two ways to meet for business, over the phone or in person. Now there's a better way. Use GoToMeeting to meet online. With GoToMeeting, everyone sees your computer desktop on their computer screen, so you get the best of both worlds. It's like meeting in person, but without wasting time and money traveling. And your conference calls will be more effective. The best part is that you can actually try it for free. That's right, GoToMeeting is free right now for 30 days. For this special offer, you must visit www.gotomeeting.com/podcast. That's gotomeeting.com/podcast for a free trial. And welcome to the Disciplined Investor Podcast. I'm so glad that you can join me today. We have a special guest, Frank Curzio. He's come back from his trip to China. We're going to get to that in just a second. I just wanted to say hello. It is episode number 180 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. This is Andrew Horowitz, and we have lots to talk about today. We're really going to focus on the area of China. I'm not going to spend too much time talking about other things. I do want you to take note, though, that over the last several weeks, and as a matter of fact, on DH Unplugged this week, we talked about how Europe is in such substantial mess. They are just in just a disarray, and we saw a lot of the numbers come in surprisingly from a analyst perspective, surprisingly low. This is on the heels of a lot of numbers that we saw last week, like the German Zoo Confidence, which was looking at out 6 months. And they were coming in low, and we're seeing a lot of noise out there, like the Irish bond CDS spread is the highest it has been in history. Portugal is also reaching levels not seen really ever before in terms of the cost to insure the bonds of the sovereign debt. So anyway, that's going on there. And in the meantime, we had a good discussion last week when it came to prop trading. But I wanted to switch over because Frank Curzio, you know him from his podcast. He is a writer of several newsletters. He's a good friend of mine. You know who he is. You just look up Frank Curzio or just click on any of the little buttons we have on any of the show notes when it is concerned with when he's on, and you'll find it. So I'm going to welcome Frank and say, Ni hao.
I know. That was one of the few words I knew going into China because my daughter watches Kai Lan. And they teach how to say hello. So that was the only word before going on my 10-day trip.
Well,
I have another
one for you, Frank.
Yeah.
Warren Shea Ruhe. And that's how's the pollution?
It's really a pretty big theme in China. And I guess that's a pretty good place to start. We all heard about the pollution in Beijing from the athletes when we had the Olympics there. But, you have to look a little bit past Beijing and Shanghai, and that's basically what my trip was all about. And, looking past those areas, there's tremendous growth going on inland in China because wages are being going higher. So what they're doing is they're not taking the jobs out of China like they did with major economies like Japan, U.S. as they grew, and also Europe, where they shipped off jobs to Taiwan, China, Vietnam. In China, the jobs are staying within China. They're just moving inland, and all the Fortune 500 companies are moving inland, and that's forcing an enormous construction boom, one that a lot of people aren't really talking about. They're only talking about the ones basically on the east coast of China. And this massive boom in construction and industrialization is creating pollution beyond control, where you're seeing every single car filthy with soot. You're seeing every bicycle filthy. There's a lot of different places you could go for the pollution, but it's 10 times worse there where compared to Beijing, which we also visited, my research team. But the pollution was very, very bad. And also, I felt it very dangerous, at least over the long term, if it stays like that. And it probably will stay like that for at least a couple of decades.
Well, we were looking at that some time ago, and we went to find stocks that actually could be a play on the pollution theme that would be looking at maybe greener style of production or looking even to find a way to, you know, cut down on some of the pollution. We looked at companies like, you know, a couple of small companies there like Rhino and Heat. They are just got obliterated. You know, it seems like China doesn't really care about the pollution circumstance. And as a matter of fact, I think when they went recently to the Copenhagen Convention, basically between them and Australia, they said, you know what, we don't have time for that right now. We're so much more involved in just dealing with recovering our, you know, our economy and dealing with the industrial demands and the needs, and they just don't seem to care about Mother Earth right now. I'm not suggesting they're good or bad about that, but that's just the way it seems.
Well, it seems that, you know what, the government's really taking major steps right now. They have no desire to really go off of their coal standard, which coal is used to supply 80% of their electricity. They're going to use coal forever. But they are getting more tougher, at least the government is, when it comes to alternative energy. And let me explain something about alternative energy. When we hear alternative energy in America, we think companies that are absolutely horrible, they're not going to make money to 2017 based on a discounted cash flow models that these analysts provide,
you know how the system works. Yep.
But also they need government help. In China, there's a lot of great companies that are actually profitable, making money, that don't need the government help. So if you really want to reduce your risk, some of these companies have great balance sheets. Some of the companies that we were looking at, one of them is called China Integrated Energy, CBEH, biodiesel company. And we visited about six or seven companies, and we visited six cities in 10 days. So it was a lot of flights, eight flights in 10 days. But we visited this company, and every company we visited, we said basically, you know, what keeps you up at night, or what's one of the biggest risks? And one of their biggest risks is they can't produce enough of this stuff because demand is so high. So you're looking at a company that has a great balance sheet. They already have the infrastructure set up. So you know, alternative energy companies are a lot different. You just have to do your homework, because some of them are profitable. You're looking at trends that are going to be, you know, not 2-3 year trends, but decades long, where you're going to see huge demand. And basically, China Integrated Energy, they make the biodiesel by all the disgusting oil and all the food, you know, from the oil there, and they just take it and they create fuel. So
yeah. So just to explain that to what that means is biodiesel. They're basically taking a organic substance that is essentially eating through the waste and sludge, right, and recreating energy from that.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. So let's make sure everybody understands what we're talking about. So it's kind of a natural process of, you know, what it reminds me of. This is pretty awful, but you know, one time we got a book on Star Trek. This is kind of a number of years ago, and we were looking at, you know, all the different things on the USS Enterprise and how things were made and all that. And you always wondered, you know, how would the transporter work? And you know, obviously it was all fiction, but how did, you know, they do the replicator? The replicator made food, right? You would say, I want, you know, a turkey sandwich, and a turkey sandwich would come out, right? Mm-hmm. What we found further down, what it was is that the replicator used the excrement of the waste and turned it back into food. Now,
you're not like one of those guys that go to like the Star Trek thing.
And no. Like, it just happened to be one day. I was on a vacation somewhere or whatever. We picked up this inside the Star Trek Enterprise and all these like interesting weird facts on the fiction. You know, it was kind of like this whole, it was like this whole,
I mean, if you
made up about made up.
It's okay. I'm a Lord of the Rings fan, and I probably
it was a little strange. It was a little strange. But now, here the point is that there's a lot of different bacteria and a lot of different microbes that are being used not only to destroy energy. For example, there are these kinds of microbes that are being used with wood. For example, you know, you take a natural process and you take the wood chips and maybe even the burnt wood, and you can actually have these bacteria that will create energy from the transference of you know, one type of chemical compound to another, which again transforms to energy. So that's the whole bioenergy side of things. Interesting, but oftentimes it takes a lot of money and a lot of material to get to that point is what we've seen. So
and that's the thing with this. I mean, if you look at solar, wind, you know, biodiesel, geothermal, to start a company like that in the U.S., it's impossible
with the red tape and all that. It's impossible.
Yeah, you have to be basically in that industry already, getting a ton of money from the government. That's the main thing, especially with China Integrated Energy, which is a company that we like a lot, is that one, it has a great balance sheet. It's making money. They're seeing enormous demand, but the infrastructure is already set up. They actually have a Their whole transit system, where they're located, is in Xi'an, right in central China. And basically, that's the train system can go to any place in China. It just shoots out. They have like a map of everything. And their facility is only about a mile away, and they actually have a transit system from when they build it right to go to the main hub, so they could train everything that they have to every place. So when you have that infrastructure set up, and that's really key, that's when you could just say, okay, all we need to do is produce this stuff, and we're going to make a ton of money. And that's the stage that they're at. Now, you know, you're looking at the whole China small cap theme itself, and we saw the Barron's article come out and say that, you know, reverse merger companies are bad, and, you know, they kind of handpick nine. And they use a time frame, the same time frame basically, that ExxonMobil is down 40% as well. So I didn't like the article too much in Barron's. It really pushed a lot of these small caps down.
And you and I talked about this. This article pissed you off.
Yeah, I'm not saying this because I went to China. Because right. you had guys like Chano saying that.
Oh, yeah, no, hold on. Let me interrupt you for a second. Because I want you to, you know, we free flow here, and you and I, we're like two cackling old men that we could talk for hours and probably talk exactly at the same time and understand each other as we talk, right?
True, very true.
Very true. By the way, I want to mention something, that by the time you hear this podcast, let me think about this for 1 second. Yes. By the time you hear this podcast, right about the time that you probably are downloading this in the early part of the week, Frank Curzio is going to have baby number two.
Two. Yeah.
If it's a boy, we know it's going to be Frankie Jr. Or he's thinking about calling it Andrew. He mentioned that to me.
Yeah, Andrew, yeah. I was actually going to call, the first name was going to be Horowitz. Actually.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that'd be great. That'd be great. Call him Potty, podcast name. No, so congratulations on that, by the way. Seriously.
Thank you very much.
And congratulations to your wife. And, you know, my best wishes to her. And
thanks,
a woman that is obviously needs to be sainted. But nonetheless, I wanted to ask you a couple questions about that. You bring up Chano's. So
yes.
Chano's and a few other fellows out there have been absolutely all over the China is about to crash bubble, you know, get out while the going's good concept, particularly focused on the housing sector. Now, they talk about how the loans were too easy to get, and then on top of that, there was you know, people buying 2 and 3 and 4 homes at low interest rates when all that money came pouring down out of the sky with their $585 billion stimulus. And you know, we've seen a lot of really interesting infrastructure plays there, or infrastructure. I mean, the number of coal-fired plants that go up on a weekly basis, you know, they're building nuclear. The amount of road that they're laying down on a weekly basis, it's like worker ants by the millions that are just like out there working and building, you know, a gigantic fort. And they are very efficient. They're working as much as they can be. But you know what? Two things. Number one, the government obviously recognized that the housing sector was too hot. They did. I mean, we can't argue that fact. Now, did they do the right thing by pulling it in, whatever? So the question I ask you is, you know, from where you were maybe a year ago, because we've talked about China several different times, and I know you went here and you saw a lot of the inside of what was going on there. You know, is Chano's so far off? And if he is, why is he? He's a smart guy, at least from what I understand.
Yeah, and you know what? Everyone that's listened to this, who's heard me before, listened to my podcast, and even, you know, yourself, I'm not an arrogant person. I'm more like a humble guy. So, you know, I don't want this to sound arrogant when I say it, but I think I can't see where Chano's is coming from when he says that the China market's going to be Dubai times 1,000. That's a quote. And, you know, Dubai has 2 million people. They're building ski slopes in the middle of the desert. And, you know, it was a really bad analogy considering that you're looking at China. When I was there, that, you know, you saw probably 100,000 bikes and not one of them was new. You know, they're not a flashy economy. They don't like to show off things for their neighbors. You know, their savings rate is 30% compared to ours, which is 6%. They're a savings economy. But I think when you're looking at the housing market, people are like, the prices have risen so much. But they've come from such a small base. And you have to remember, China's economy is growing 9.6% on an annual basis over the past 10 years. So just because prices rise doesn't necessarily it means that they're expensive. Now, let me continue with that. Now, I do believe there's no secret that on the East Coast you're looking at Beijing and you're looking at Shanghai. Yes, definitely. You know, the housing prices are high. But, you know, for Chano's to go on TV and say this is going to absolutely collapse, before you go with that thesis, there's a few things you should know. And one is China doesn't have a subprime market. You know, for first-time home buyers, you have to put down 30%. Now, if you think about that, you're putting down 30%. You have equity in your home. So even if the market comes down, you're not going to walk away where, you know, what we had over here, people buying four or five houses with you know, a fake library card. You don't have to show income or anything. And when, you know, the market collapsed, they're like, well, see you later. I'm out of here. We created that. The government created that situation. It's not like that in China.
Well, how are they buying two and three different homes then?
They're not allowed. Actually, if you buy because they have a ton of money that they don't know what to do with. So, Frank,
there's a class system over there. I mean, there are definitely the haves and the have-nots, and there are substantially more have-nots in China than there are on the haves, right?
Absolutely, yes.
And even the middle class, China style, is ultra low class. And here. I'm talking about financially. I'm not talking about, you know, in terms of the type of person it is. Here, I mean, you know, the median wage in China is sick. I mean, if you heard the number, I don't even think it's $3,000 a year.
Yeah, and even the doctors get paid like nearly nothing. Right. We visit a lot of hospitals. One of the top 10 hospitals had cracks in the wall. I mean, you're looking at an economy that's just getting started. You're not looking at, you know, people are used to seeing the numbers and reading the headlines and, you know, looking at pictures of Shanghai. Yeah, you know, Shanghai is like New York City. That's Shanghai, you know. So, and Beijing as well. You could put in that class. It's a little bit older. I'd consider that like Washington D.C. You know, if you take those two out, you know, the housing market is just building up. These people are saving money, tremendous saving rates to basically buy homes. Now, is there speculation going on? Absolutely. Is there corruption going on? Yeah, you know, you have that in a lot of economies, and especially in China. But as far as seeing a real collapse like we saw in the U.S., since there's no subprime market, I don't see that happening. Another thing you have to take note is, you know, just like if you would buy, you have your house in Florida, you know, I have a house in Florida. Sometimes if you live in these gated communities, you have to pay a fee. You also have to pay taxes. There's no taxes. There's no fees there. So you could actually buy a home and sit on it, even if prices decline. And if you did that in the U.S., you're paying money every single month, right? You got to pay your bills every single month.
You don't
really have to do that in China. Now, does that mean the market won't come down? No, it's overvalued. It can come down. But if it comes down 15%, you're looking at an economy that has a lot of cash that's looking to buy into the property market, which almost creates a floor of value. So if you're looking for that type of collapse, you're not going to see it in China. I really believe you're not going to see it in China because they have the cash to buy if prices come down. You don't see a subprime market. You're not going to see people walking away from their homes because they have to put down a lot of money. For your second home, you have to put down 50, 60%.
The other thing is about the chain. I have to get Chanos on here. I'm going to try to get him on in the next couple of weeks. I need to find out the differential here, what he's talking about, comparing it to Dubai, et cetera. The differential with Dubai is that we knew that Dubai did not have any kind of backing. In other words, yeah, they had the United Arab Emirates, AUE, and they had the whole area, but they did not have materials. They did not have any kind of any backing other than the financial. It was a pure money play over there. Whereas China obviously has materials. You know, they have a tremendous surplus. Obviously, we know that. So there is that kind of differential too, and I don't understand how he does, in fact, compare it to the two, because Dubai was building for the excess, right? It was building not for really residents. How many residents live in Dubai anyway? It was building a tremendous, gigantic, you know, it's the only 7-star hotel in the world, right? And it was building almost to the excess, to the highest end customer that was going to be a temporary customer. It's kind of like the equivalent of a Monte Carlo in a way, right, for the Middle East. So we'll get to that. I want to kind of go on a couple of different topics here. This week we found that the Shanghai port is now the number one port in the world in terms of overall containers coming in and leaving, I guess, taking over Singapore for the first time. Did you see that story?
Well, no, but I could even stop you there because I don't know if I sent you this link yet, but I'm actually going to put it up on our Stansberry & Associates website. I'm going to try to put it up next week because I don't know if I'm going to get a podcast in with the baby coming. But we stayed at the Grand Hyatt in Shanghai. It's one of the biggest buildings there, and we stayed on the 75th floor. Now, one of the members of my team is a photographer, and his job is just to take pictures and videos. And he set up a video overlooking the river that comes right through, you know, a pretty big river that comes right through Shanghai. And his intentions were to get the sunset, and I don't know if, you know, you probably know because you're in photography, where you know, you really shrink it down to 5-second intervals and you play it fast and you see sunrise come up and go down,
right,
and all lights go.
Right.
Well, it's amazing because
what
he captured was unbelievable, where in a 5-hour period, and we shrunk this down to a minute and a half video, there's about, I would say, 300 to 400 boats
right
that are empty. They right. all come through in a straight line. They all come through empty. They all fill up with materials, whatever it is, if it's coal, sand, dirt, and they all go to every place in China just to deliver that every single day for a five-hour period. When you see the video and you see how many boats are coming through, and just imagine it's a five-hour period that we really sped up to five-second intervals, and it's a minute and a half. Every single day this goes on, that's how much building is taking place. And you know, I know people claim that there's empty buildings there. You know, I didn't see anything empty. Every mall I went to was jammed. Again, I visited six cities, and you know, maybe I just went the time that everybody was there. I'm just telling you what I see. You could take it for what
maybe
it's
they
worth.
Heard you were coming.
Yeah, maybe they filled up the malls and said, "Quick, Frank's going to go back and tell everybody." You know, China's crowded. Everybody
you know, I'm thinking. You know what I'm thinking? Just to back up for a second, that. You know, your job in delivery is not, there's not much for you to do. I mean, really, what are you going to do? Right? You get, you know, yelled at a little bit. You hold a hand. I love you, honey. Oh, my God. This is the best day of our lives. Those kind of things, right? Mm-hmm. Let's do the podcast from there.
Yeah,
I'll come up with a portable equipment. Would you think your wife will mind?
I don't know if she'd mind.
I mean, she may like it. You never know. I mean, we would do a live birth podcast. That would be just unbelievable.
Yeah, I could actually talk about the equipment makers,
yeah.
what's going on, how much the doctors get paid. That might be a good podcast.
Yeah,
my wife probably won't talk to me for a couple of months. But
that's all right. That's all right. More time for us to play.
That's such a bad thing sometimes.
All right, so listen, let's talk about the idea. There's a couple of things I noticed when I was in – as a matter of fact, I did the same kind of thing with the river. I did it in Bangkok, by the way. And look, watching the river and the river barges go by and all that amazing stop when I sped it up. What is the story with some of the things that are going on that you notice? For example, one of the things that I notice is that we have a lot of smoking that goes on over there, right? You get a tremendous amount of smoking that goes on in most other places in the United States. Did you notice? Okay, this is kind of creepy. Did you notice that a lot of people had trouble and problems with their teeth? Seriously, did you notice?
No, I didn't notice that.
When I was in Japan, I hope I'm not pissing anybody off here, but when I was in Japan, it seemed that a lot of people had, could have used orthodontics, you know? It really seemed like that to me. There was a company that we looked into. There's a few different companies that do this, a couple of a Henry Schein that does some of the work and export that. There is also, Patterson does that. There's also one more I'm trying to think of the name that we looked at several times, something dental. I'll have to think about that again. Anyway,
okay, I can really tell you one of the better plays, especially with the pollution that's taking place. I think that and also the smoking, where you could really smoke in hotels down there. A lot of people smoked. All the cab drivers smoked. I'd say 40% of the population smokes. But you're going to see a big trend towards cancer. And I don't like talking about that because, you know, it's not a good topic. But cancer rates are actually skyrocketing, and it's for a couple of reasons. One is you're going to see pollution, that it's going to continue. But another reason is because due to the healthcare plan, these people are actually getting diagnosed now. They're actually going to hospitals to get tested. So this way they get tested early. So you're seeing these rates go up tremendously. And one great play that we visited is called Concord Medical Services. It's symbol CCM. And they actually make those big machines that you see in a lot of hospitals, like from GE. They actually buy them, at least in the hospitals, where, you know, the CAT scans and, you know, you get tested and everything, and they make a huge percent of revenue. And the company is in great shape, another company with a great balance sheet that I think is a good play. And these are not
What's the symbol on it?
CCM. And they're not yearly plays. It's another stock that pretty much got hit at KDI not too long ago, and the estimates were too high. We even spoke to management. They said, listen, some of the estimates that they put on this were ridiculous. They're more in favor now. I think it IPO'd at 10, and it's like 650 now, 670. But I just think it's a brilliant play in the market. And be careful with the situations I'm giving you. It doesn't mean that go ahead and buy them right away. I mean, you see – you know, these are decade-long trends that these companies are going to take advantage of. Huge, enormous markets. They're expanding at the hospitals everywhere, all over China. It's a great company. So, it's going to have its ups and downs, just like every other economy. But I think this is one of the great plays that I like. This one and also China Integrated.
Sirona Dental was the name of the other one I was thinking about, actually.
Okay.
That one, they had a lot of exports to the Asian area, and actually they kind of came down. That was something we looked at some time ago. It's S-I-R-O is the symbol. Take a look at that, because I know that may not sound, normal. By the way, you could tell that Frank's not Jewish, because let me tell you why, Frank. You're from New York. Do you know you said that there's a lot of cancer going on in potentially going to happen in China, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, this is how a Jewish person would say it, right? there's a lot of cancer going on in China. You know, you have to whisper. You have to whisper. You can't say, you know what? Did I tell you that George had a heart attack? You know, it's like that. You can't say these things out loud.
That is true.
You have to whisper.
I feel bad saying that. And what I'm trying to say is, you know, don't buy these plays saying, oh, more people are going to die of cancer. I'm just saying it's a trend where more people are going to get diagnosed, which is a good thing. And then they could stop themselves if they get diagnosed early. But more people are going to go to hospitals. And in order to do that, they have to pretty much go through the system that, you know, Concord makes. So, you know, I think it's a great play. I'm always hesitant because, you know, I personally, you know, my dad died of lung cancer. I'm not a fan of you know, Altria yet. You know, from a stock market perspective, you're looking for a high dividend. You know, if you hate cancer, I don't know. You know, I think I heard someone say, listen, you know, buy the stock, take the dividend, and you know, donate it to charity, a cancer society or something, whatever. But from an investment purpose, I think it's a great thing. But I hate really talking personally about things like that.
I hear you. Let's talk about some other things that are obviously evident in China. Now, we have, what, 1.3 billion or so people that live there. And I've always thought about, I've mentioned this before, and it's, you know, every time I think of China, it's just the vastness and the incredible amount of not only land, but the amount of people that are there and the potential. And, you know, don't forget, it is a industrial powerhouse. It is a political powerhouse. Right now, it is working on being a leader also in the area of military, but they're still not there. And I think that makes our government and people kind of shake in their boots a little bit. But when it comes to one of the things that people have to do every single day, and that's very simple, and that's eat. You know, when you look at 1.3 billion people, if you consider that maybe they eat one chicken a week, each of them, okay? And if you kind of multiply that out, there's billions and billions and billions of chickens they eat a year. And I've tried to, like, kind of put that into perspective and figure where are all those chickens going. I've said this many times, but it's not just chickens. I mean, we're talking about eggs. We're talking about meat. We're talking about vegetables. We're talking about just an enormous amount of food. Now, what comes into play there is how do you get that food? Well, you have feed, you know, for either cattle or for chickens or for whatever it may be, for whatever livestock is. And we're seeing things like corn prices go up dramatically, which is really, I find, fascinating, by the way. When we're seeing cotton at a 25-year high, we're seeing sugar move up again, Arabic coffee at a 15-year high, Starbucks just increased their pricing on some of their products this week because of that. We're seeing the grains just get off the charts. And at the same time, we're being told that there's no inflation. Yet food inflation is significant. And we have to do that every single day. We have to eat more than we have to drive, right? So, you know, and a lot of this is occurring because of drought conditions, like we saw wheat and the fires in Russia, but also conditions around the world because there is just so many more mouths to feed in India. Just take India and Asia, but India and China really as the play right there. So I think one of the things that you talked about, you and I talked about the fertilizer companies for some time ago, and you were early in, but you actually made out pretty well on your recommendation of potash. Now, BHP is doing their best to do a hostile takeover, and potash is doing what they can to defend themselves against this hostile takeover, and they're actually doing some very interesting maneuvering right now. But what is the story with the fertilizer, and why is it so important right now, and what are some of the, you know, the areas that we can look to play on that?
Well, if you look at it, China's actually running out of food. And if you get a chance, Google that. That's a fact. That's not just me throwing out something out there to scare you. The government is actually worried about it, and there's a reason for that. If you're looking at the arable land where they produce crops, it's almost like on the East Coast and a little bit south. And if you look at a map and take a look at a map of China, you could probably Google as well and look at industrialization, that's where the most industrialization is taking place. So they're actually building on the areas that they built that they used to have crops on. So that's less area to produce food. Now, to make up for that, they use companies, you know, they use fertilizer. There's a reason why BHP is bidding so high for potash, and it's going to probably have to bid a lot higher, 150, 160 to get it. But what these fertilizer companies do is they've been dumping so much fertilizer to increase crop yields that it's almost to the point where it's polluting the land. So what they're doing is the government is mandating that they use organic fertilizers. So there's not too many organic fertilizer plays out there, but there's one in China that I think has tremendous upside potential, and it's called Yangyi International. Now, one of his competitors had accounting problems, China Agritech, and a lot of people got very upset with that and like, you know, China's crazy. Well, Yingyi is a different situation. One, which you want to take a look at, is they're audited by one of the big four. They're audited by KPMG, even though they're based in China. That's a very big plus because people are worried about that. That gives more credibility to their financials. Company has a great balance sheet. It's growing tremendously. They have so much demand, they have to build more plants. Yep. But there's a big shift going not just to traditional fertilizers, but to organic fertilizers. And Yingyi sells even to individual farmers. It's selling in more than 20,000 stores. It's a company not too many people talk about. The symbol's Y-O-N-G, Yong. But definitely take a look at it. Good balance sheet, huge growth. You don't have to worry about the financials. Not too many people know about it right now. I do think that's going to change in a year from now because, again, every situation that I'm giving you is trends that are decades long. They're not right. Like 1-2 years. So you're going to see fluctuation in prices. But, man, if you get in early in these trends, you can see enormous gains. You know, it's not just, you know, like a 1-2 year thing where, okay, you know, financials are going higher right now or whatever, or, you know, some kind of stimulus that's going to boost the sector. No, this is happening for decades long. And China has a major, major problem that few people are talking about, but they are running out of food and looking for ways to increase crop yields. And they're pushing organic fertilizers. I think Yang is probably the best play.
Now, China Agritech, there's two of them, actually. There's China, CAG, I believe, is one symbol. I got to look that up. See, but CAGC is the other. That's the one that had some of the problems.
China Agritech, yeah. Yep. That's the one that had problems, and the company came down. And they really haven't defended themselves either right. About the accounting problems. They just basically said nothing's wrong. And, you know, that just, you know, added fuel to the fire, especially with the Barron's article and Chino shouting out there. And, you know, remember, Chino has this massive short position. You know, he's going to be on TV every day telling you, China's terrible, China's terrible. Yep. But it's just, you know, you have to look behind the window a little bit, look at the facts. I really didn't see it. I think you're going to see companies on every single market that are like this, but Yang is in much better shape in the fact that they're audited by one of the big four.
I just wanted to go through. The CGA is actually the symbol, I believe. China Green Agriculture. That's a different company. There's two different companies. China Green Agriculture, which is also seen a pretty ugly-looking share price move over recently. There's China Agritech, which is now about $10 down from a very high. There's also Converted Organics. Now, that's not a – where are they located out of? These are – I think is this COIN, C-O-I-N. Is this in Canada? Operations Fertilizer, Gonzalez. I thought these guys were
– That's a penny stock, though. That's like 40 cents, I think, Converted Organics.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, but the CAGC, the interesting thing that when I looked at CAGC, they have stores. They're actually selling fertilizers like you know, they have, you know, where you could buy them for, you know, buy the fertilizer if you want to use it for your house and things like that. So we don't think of potash going to a potash store and going to be a pound of this stuff, you know?
to put in perspective, if you ever walked into Delhi and you saw a boar's head, and Boar's Head gives you all of this material. Like if you own a deli, they'll give you like all these signs and everything, and they give it to you for free as long as you sell Boar's Head. It's almost to the point that's what Yingyi and also China Agritech do, where you know they're really just trying to corner the market. I don't know too much about their financials as a company. I've never really followed, but I do follow Yingyi, and what they do is basically they go into these small stores and say, here's everything, Yingyi everywhere, and they're selling it in 20,000 stores, and you know they're just increasing dramatically. So you know I don't want to sound too
like
positive.
Is it like the Scott's Miracle Grow? Here's what they do. The research and development and sale of fulvic acid-based liquid and powder nutrient compounds used in the agriculture industry in the People's Republic of China. It manufactures and sells two principal products, which are plant and animal product. The company Universal Liquid Plant product consists of its fulvic acid compound base mixed with an additional nutrients that typically plants need to grow. It also has various types of crops, but mixing with water and spraying directly on plants and typically in conjunction with normal fertilizer and pesticide usage. In the an animal product is a powder. Wait, it's animal product is a powder. What is that?
I wouldn't worry about the animal product.
Mixed with Chinese herbs.
Yeah, very, very small percentage of their revenues. The main revenue is how they use their fertilizer to basically, you know, increase those crop yields and makes fruit brighter, makes them taste better. And this is organic fertilizer company.
Just to share this with you, net profit margin went from 2.5% to 28% from 2009 to 2010. Operating margin pretty straight from 32 to 35. Return on assets went from 2.5% to 57%. Return on average equity 2% to 64%. Employees about 400. So that's kind of an interesting little stock. And If we look at this on a five-year basis, you know, the stock has been pretty steady, not going very much in any direction. Year-to-date, it's down about 12%. It's had a lot of movement, somewhat thinly traded under about 500,000 shares a day. But interesting, Yang Yi. Okay, cool. Very cool. Mm-hmm. So let's see. In terms of in your trip, what was one of the most striking things that you could say that you noticed and that was what was the takeaway from the whole entire trip, you know, throughout the whole time you were there?
I would say the massive construction taking place and in tier two and tier three cities. And, you know, I mentioned this before where, you know, tier two and tier three may sound small, but they actually have more people in those cities than New York City. And every single building, almost every single building, had cranes on them. The cranes are operating. People are working. Construction workers are working. They're not, you know, whistling at girls like they do in New York eating lunch for 4 hours. They are actually working. And day and night, the lights are on at night, 2 a.m. They're working. And the massive building, thousands and thousands of skyscrapers, every one of them, you know, people in a lot of them, people everywhere. It's just, it's almost like you came to New York in the 1950s. And you're just seeing that massive growth take place. Now, does that mean you go and buy infrastructure companies? No. You have to do a lot of homework, and you have to look at valuations. Maybe you want to get familiar with the Hong Kong market. Those are where the best plays are because, you know, if you're looking at the Hong Kong market, it's a foreign market, but it's more difficult to get on the Hong Kong market for a company than it is to get on the NASDAQ. So, you know, that gives that market a little more credibility. Plus, a lot of the companies in the Hong Kong market don't want to trade in the U.S. because they trade up and down along with the U.S. no matter what the numbers are. They don't want that. They want to, you know, be in an enormous growth market where, you know, and the week that I went there, it was funny. It was in mid-August, and I'm there, and I'm seeing the market collapse. That's when the S&P fell like 5.5%. And we're in a deleveraging economy. You know, we're reducing our credit cards, you know, our houses, we're in an enormous amount of debt. You've seen the banks, the leverage. Over there, it's a pure growth economy. They're building more, everything's excess, they're saving more, they have cash there, they have enough money. So, you know, I'm looking at these two markets going, wow, I can't believe that I'm not invested in the China market. Like, Jim Rogers has been on this trend for such a long time. And you know, my advice would be to get familiar with the Hong Kong market. You could change, you know, currencies, RMBs, the dollars on a lot of different sites to make it a little easier. And I would say try to put capital into these growth markets because right now you're sitting in a U.S. market that's no doubt the best market in the world. But remember, we're deleveraging right now. We have a lot of problems. I don't think we're going to see a massive collapse in stocks.
No, it's just very opposite. I mean, I agree with you wholeheartedly with your analysis of the 1950s and 60s or so in terms of the revolution of broadening infrastructure. You know, now, if we were to broaden infrastructure in our country right now, it would have to be fixing the infrastructure, right? It would have to be a not really new infrastructure. We have a lot of the infrastructure right now. It would have to be a second or third or whatever round it would be of fixing it. They're in the initial. It's like virgin territory. It's kind
Think of going to Montana or in the middle of a desert or something and building cities from scratch. You're talking about power lines. You talk about water. You talk about materials. I mean, that's really what's taking place where you're seeing the huge commodity boom. And you know, I know almost everything I said here sounds like extremely bullish and go buy China. Look, I went there being negative after reading everyone's comments.
Yeah, no, you were negative for a long time on China.
Yeah, and I was negative on China for a while. It's just when you're actually there, and I'm not talking about Beijing and Shanghai, which everybody seems to talk about, but you know, we have 5,000 pictures of this, all the buildings, the construction taking place. We also went to Macau. And
oh, I like that place.
Immediately I said, you know what? It was a Monday night. We had to take a ferry there from Hong Kong, and I said, take it right to the Venetian Macau. And we went there, and it was 7:30, 8 o'clock on a Monday night. And the first thing I noticed, and I've been to a ton of casinos, not for research purposes. I like to gamble sometimes. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in Vegas and Atlantic City, this casino floor was about three times the size of anything I've ever seen.
Well, it's also multiple floors. It's multiple floors at that one, right?
Well, this one, I don't know if there's multiple. I just saw one. It was an enormous floor. It was, I don't know. I mean, they probably have, like, poker and whatever upstairs or whatever it is. But this floor was absolutely enormous, so much so that We talked to some of the people there, and they said they took out the restaurants to increase the floor space. And I have to tell you, almost every single table was jammed.
But it wasn't blackjack. It was Baccarat, right?
No, there's baccarat, there's pai gao polka, there's China, different China games. Like, if you're a Vegas nut, I wouldn't say go to Macau. You know,
because no, I found it hard when I went there. And by the way, you didn't take a ferry though. You took a hydrofoil, right?
We actually took a ferry. It was an hour long. We took a ferry across.
I thought it was a hydrofoil. Okay, that's same type of thing, but just, you know, it floats on the water. And by the way, you know, we are invested in Las Vegas Sands, which is probably the best pure play Macau play that we can have from this side. Wynn Macau is also important, but Las Vegas also includes Singapore, so we'll take that, and that's doing very well. You and I have talked about that, and the whole region is just, they're crazy about gaming. They love it. They just love their gambling over there. But one of the things that you have to know is that not a lot of people want to investigate some stocks that are on different exchanges. What you can do then, if you want to buy, for example, the Hong Kong market, you buy an ETF symbol FXI. There's also the PowerShares Golden Dragon Halter, which is what they call it, the Halter USX China Index, 103 Chinese companies or so. That's PGJ. There's also GXC, which is the S&P Spider, S&P China Index. There's about 342 companies that are publicly traded in China. There's a few other ones. There's one that a lot of people look at, for example, CAF, I believe it is, which is also China. And then there's also a lot of, you know, things that people have been looking at. You know, I've looked at Mindray before. Did you take a look at Mindray Medical at all?
Well, the reason why we stay away from Mindray Medical is because most of its sales come from outside of China. We're really looking to take advantage of China itself. So that's why we really shied away from that. China Medical is one we looked at. That stock has run up lately. Winter Medical, one of the largest providers of medical supplies. A lot has to do with cotton. Cotton's up tremendously, so this stock has taken a little bit of a hit, but I actually love it at these levels. We actually visited their office in Shenzhen, and we were there for 4 hours, and we saw tent trucks load up and leave. And you know, they put us through the whole manufacturing department. We had to dress up. You know, it was amazing from start to finish. And you know, Winter Medical, WWIN, is a very good company, and you know, it's trading at very cheap levels because you're seeing you know, very high cotton prices right now. So I think once that comes down a little bit, the stock could really, really take off, because one of the biggest things, or one of the biggest catalysts in China, is, you know, the healthcare and the stimulus plan, and a lot of that money is going up to open new hospitals, new clinics, and what's the first thing they need to do is buy medical supply. So this is a great play on that.
So we talked about also energy. Let's skip over to energy. There's a couple that you and I have looked at before, like a Puda Coal or primarily a LNL Energy, and these things are thinly traded. They move around a lot. But what's the story over there? I mean, there seems to be the need for a variety of different types of coal for heating, and also for construction of steel products, et cetera. What's your take on the whole coal market for China?
Well, it's interesting because what happened with China's coal market is it's all enormous, and we all know that. But most of the coal is supplied by the biggest region in the world is called Shanxi. And there is a ton of small coal companies that operate there, and they, you know, there's a lot of corruption there. They pay off a lot of the inspectors and everything just to really say, hey, you know, I don't pay attention to this. And there's been many, many safety concerns. So the government cracked down on this, and they actually created consolidators, or companies that these small coal companies have to actually sell their assets to other companies. And they're selling them for like 2x EBITDA when they're worth 5x EBITDA. So if you're a consolidator, that's great news for you, because you're getting these mines for absolutely nothing. So a lot of these China companies like Puda Coal, who is just a coal washing company, is now becoming a mining company, and they're taking over all these assets. They're raising money. And you know, the stock has gotten hit a little bit because secondary offerings don't go that well, and you're seeing the China market. But if you're looking at earnings, they blew out the earnings estimates. And I think that's going to continue to happen over the long term. And as the stock really comes down, I think it's a great buy. But you know, if you're one of those consolidators and they want to basically take all these little mines and put them into a bigger company, this way, you know, you can monitor them better and you could improve their safety, because a lot of these have safety concerns. I think that, you know, if you're looking at coal, look at some of the consolidators. I wrote about this on a free site we have, which is called Growth Stock Wire. And I wrote about the consolidators. I wrote about a lot of companies. I wrote all about China that I'm talking about today, and all that's for free.
Well, that's good stuff. I mean, boy, there's just such an incredible amount of things that we really should know about it. You know, when I think about the markets of the world right now, and I could, if I was to stop and just sit back for a second and think, okay, where would it be, just from everything you know about the economics, the world aging population, the world population, the potential for new innovation and all that, you know, you have to think Asia. You know, or let me say this differently. You can't think about Europe, in my opinion. They're just, you got to write them off. I mean, the only thing that's going to help them, the only possible issue that will help them is that they are going to have a tremendous amount of monetary backing, which is the equivalent of not stimulus, but really quantitative easing, which even though they did that, and even though they're backing their bonds, and Greece is falling down, Italy and Ireland, et cetera, you know, you just can't see where that's going to come from. They have some places like Germany probably being the heart of it all that may see some good exports, but, you know, that's not there. You know, you don't see it in the United States. The United States, we're whining and bitching and moaning right now about the yuan. We want the yuan to appreciate by 20%. And over there, they're saying, are you people out of your minds? We're not doing that. That would just cause a terrible problem for our economy. There's no way we're going to do something like that. We're trying to build up the internal infrastructure as well as the savings and all that. This would cause a major problem. It could cause revolts, etc. So we're sitting there doing this whole complaining act on the yuan, which maybe there is some truth to the fact that they have a much greater surplus account than we have, and the numbers are not exactly right. But you know what? You can't start smacking around the group that's really been helping the whole world recover in this whole situation. But if you look at the world, you got to count out Japan as well, in my opinion. So, yeah, what do you have left? What do you have left? We have some very good areas in Asia. You know, China.
Latin America as well is doing okay.
Yeah, Latin America too. Mexico doing great, but Mexico is linked to our hip. We go down, they go down. So aside from that, I agree with you. And a lot of the countries that are commodity rich. But many things that we're seeing here, you know, you have to stop and say for a second, Frank, I see Singapore is doing great. Their market's doing great. South Korea is doing great. They've been increasing interest rates. Their unemployment numbers are going well. What is going on with China? The markets are not really performing. Mm-hmm. What's that all about?
Well, you're going to see the ups and downs in the markets. There's actually, you know, there's no doubt. My advice is, you know, instead of looking at a market as a whole, just like the U.S. market, because some people, I love the fact when people say either, you know, Europe is terrible or China is terrible or whatever. Think about someone coming to the U.S. and saying the U.S. is terrible. Does that mean don't buy any house in any areas? Don't invest in any one of our stocks? Don't invest in anything because nothing's going to make money? No, that's not true. There's definitely pockets of growth in the U.S. where you can make a ton of money. And the same happens with China. The same happens with Europe, where, you know, not all of Europe is terrible. You know, it really isn't. North Europe is not bad. So, you know, is Japan? Most of Japan is still a little weak. But my advice, if you really want to play the markets, is go into individual themes. I mean, you know, fertilizer we went into commodities, went into infrastructure. Look what's going on with China in terms, you know, the one-child policy. What does that mean? It means, well, you're getting an older population. That's good for healthcare, right? These people get the healthcare stimulus. They're going to actually go get checked up more. Also keep in mind, if you're having one child and you have one big income, or maybe you have two incomes, all that money gets left to one person. It doesn't get left to three or four or five different kids. And that keeps the wealth within the country, within the family.
Right.
You know, you look at that, their society is basically based on saving as much as you can and only investing in things that you think could go higher. And unfortunately, you know, they're looking at the stock market, and that's kind of trading a little bit high. And you're looking at real estate, because, and that's kind of trading high. So they're kind of waiting for these two things to come down. The market's coming down a little bit, which creates opportunities. When real estate comes down, I think they're definitely, you know, again, I'm not anticipating a collapse like the U.S. You know, the subprime people walking away, leaving houses everywhere. But if it does come down, you're going to see more money, and they do have the cash to really put in behind their economy. So, you know, just focus on the interesting trends and, you know, be ready to buy. But again, you're going to see the ups and downs in every single market. I mean, look at the past 2 months in the U.S., right? August, we saw the S&P fall 5%. Now, September, it's the best September since 1954. It's up, 9% from its lows in a month. S&P 500, the major index.
Right.
Crazy.
Right.
Crazy.
Right. Well, I'll end with this little point here, I think, that realize that we're talking about China, and Confucius say, man who fall in vat of molten glass makes spectacle of self. That was... That was the only one I could read of this whole list I just found on here. They're all very funny here, and I'm trying to find another ones. Confucius say, cow with no legs, ground beef.
You could have a whole podcast. Just like
These are funny. I'm trying to find ones that I could actually say here on the thing. Confucius say, man who live in glass house should change in basement. God. I'll send you some of these. These are pretty nasty, but I'll send you. These are very, very funny. Man, if you say, man who put pee in soup, very unclean. Anyway, Frank Curzio, Stansberry and Associates, of course. He writes some great newsletters that you really need to get your hands on. The Under 10 is really one that you need to be reading on a regular basis. And he has some other special ones that are available. Also, the SNA podcast that's available on iTunes as well as other places. And in closing, I have to say, Zai Shen. I think that means goodbye.
Take care. And I love being on the show.
And you guys, good luck to you and Frankie Jr. or Francine, I guess you'll probably call her. If it's a girl. So, Frank Curzio, thanks for joining us on the Discipline Investor Podcast.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it.
All right, bye. Well, another great episode with Frank Curzio, and all the stock symbols that he had mentioned and a few other things and goodies will be on the Discipline Investor in the show notes. Make sure you check that out. You know, by the way, just to let you know, we put a lot of things on there that which you may find of interest. And what we try to do is, you know, one of the things that I do is we really want to make it easy to understand what happened with the housing numbers, what happened with durable goods. And we put it into chart format a lot of times, and sometimes when you can download and take away from it. And, you know, when you look at things like commitment of traders, and if you don't know what that is, it's all about, you know, the professionals and the commercial traders, what they're holding on to, the retail traders, what they're holding on to in terms of futures and options. And, you know, we want to make sure that you understand what's happening in the market as best as possible. Sometimes these markets, sometimes it's not that clear to understand what happens, even when we read the daily market color, when we see continually that there are no plain vanilla, as they call them, there are no mutual funds, no players really coming in to buy the market. And we're like, wait a minute, the market was up, 1%, 1.5%? Who's buying if it's not them? And then you turn around and it's just the, you know, short-term renters, they call them, either the hedge funds or possibly the high-frequency traders utilizing futures to push markets up. So, you know, that could be one reason. Same thing on the other side when the market is down. You know, you say, hey, nobody's really selling right now and shorts aren't really pushing their positions. And you're like, well, if that's not the case, then why is the market going down? So these kind of things are answered a lot of times in some of the things that we write about on there as well. And if you have any questions, of course, about, you know, what we're doing, just write me directly, askandrew@thedisciplinedinvestor.com. Now, before we go, I just want to leave you with what's happening in the next few weeks. Jeff Middlesworth from Behind the Numbers is coming on. We're going to talk about some of the things that we need to look at when it comes to a variety of companies and things that you may not see outright. For example, you know, what's really happening with the earnings at a Nike? You know, is the number really based on a lot better sales? Was it margins, a one-time situation? Was it an inventory gain? I mean, what's going on? Is it something that will continue? He dissects the balance sheet and the cash flow statements, et cetera, as well as the earnings reports to provide a great, great service. We're going to talk with him. We're also going to talk with, from Investors Business Daily, they have a brand new platform that is really neat. I've been using it for a while now. And we have, you know, William O'Neill. His son is now in charge of this. He's the president and CEO of this company that has a different, it's actually like the daily charts product that they have. And it's called MarketSmith. And he's going to be on, the son's going to be on, and we're going to talk with him at length about, you know, how we can really use this. And hopefully I prompted them to give us a few different promos or at least something we can get. And we'll hopefully give you that as well. I think it's next week. And then we have, who else do we have coming up? We have, I know I just looked at the list. I know we had a couple of really good names. John Najarian's coming back up soon. I want to talk to him about what's going on in the markets. And we'll kind of do a once-over also in earnings season, which starts, I believe it's October 7th with Alcoa. And Alcoa's been riding up into earnings season as it usually does. And on the heels of announcement that maybe, this is kind of out there, but there could be an aluminum ETF that's opening up to buy up aluminum companies and aluminum. That would obviously push up the prices and help out Alcoa. But nonetheless, we're going to have just a little bit of a shortened session today. We're going to end with that note. Again, if you have any questions at all, askandrew@thedisciplinedinvestor.com. If you want some other things to think about, check out DH Unplugged with myself and John C. Dvorak or the Winning Investors podcast. That's all available through iTunes, and it's all for free, so check them all out. Until then, we'll see you next week. Have a great week. We'll see you real soon. Bye-bye.
The Disciplined Investor Podcast is sponsored in part by Horowitz & Company, a registered investment advisor and money manager. The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contain forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations and differences can be expected. The Disciplined Investor's host, Andrew Horowitz, is a certified financial planner and registered investment advisor regulated by the SEC. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.